All right, the time is 11:09. We will start the public meeting of the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. As of this morning, the Office of the Mayor has appointed me as the interim chair of the board, so I will be leading the meeting until further notice. My name is Tamika Collier, and we have here with us all of the current board members in attendance, so we do have a quorum. We'll move to the first agenda item, the adoption of the agenda. Do we have any amendments to the agenda?
No, so move.
So move. Can I get a second?
Second.
Agenda has been adopted. We will now hear from the Office of Open Government. Mr. Barton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the board. On April 28th, an approximately 40-minute motion hearing was held at D.C. Superior Court in the matter of OOG versus Yates. As the board is well aware, this is the OOG's first Open Meetings Act enforcement action and a case of first impression in the District of Columbia. During the hearing, Judge Campbell asked counsel for both parties several substantive questions regarding their respective interpretations of provisions of the OMA and allowed the parties to discuss the merits of the case. Some of his questions were surrounded whether the act sufficiently defined what an open meeting is, what is meant by, if feasible, regarding the recording of meetings, and who is to receive any fines if the court, in fact, was to reward the fines. There has been a 11th hour overture prior to the hearing by the government, which was rejected. And I believe they made a similar offer since the hearing. A status hearing is scheduled for May 26 at 10:30 a.m. The plaintiff's cross motion for summary judgment and the defendant's motion to dismiss or any alternative for summary judgment are still pending before the court.
Folks, can I just interrupt for a second? Administrative person is telling me that Mr. Syndrom is on the phone, and he said that he was told he could call in. Is that being handled by Office of Open Government?
I mean, he's supposed to call in, or we're supposed to call him?
Not sure.
While we're waiting, Mr. Barton, I do have a couple of questions on the hearing. Were you the one actually representing Office of Open Government at the hearing?
We have a pro bono counsel. We're assisting them as we can, but we have pro bono counsel who's pretty much doing the representation in court.
Who's the pro bono counsel?
Give me a minute.
It's not. We can follow up later.
Pretty long name, law firm.
I'm curious, did they go through the conflict waiver process with the Attorney General's office for law firms who are doing business for the district?
I believe that all measures that were necessary were taken.
Thank you.
You can continue.
Since the last board meeting, the OOG issued one legal opinion, and that was on whether an agency may require that the public submit a FOIA request through the district's FOIA portal, and does FOIA require a public body to provide responsive records to the requester using an encrypted email? And regarding that issue, there are many methods that a person can submit a FOIA request, fax, email, orally, or regular mail, and encrypted email basically violates the FOIA because it limits the public's right to the record. The OOG has responded to 17 requests for informal legal advice on the OMA and FOIA. Publication of the OOG's electronic newsletter, The Open Governance, on April 26 also serves as a means of providing informal legal advice to district government public bodies and agencies on issues that may arise under FOIA and the OMA. Included in this edition of the Open Governance
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You guys forgot about me today.
I'm sorry. I didn't have notice about this. I apologize.
Meeting begun yet? Or
yes, it is. It is.
Again?
Yes, it's over. Thank you.
Mr. Barton, you can continue.
Included in this edition of the Open Governance is an analysis of one of the most recent District of Columbia FOIA decisions, instructions on the proper procedure to cancel the public meeting under the OMA, and a section entitled The Language of FOIA, which explains and defines legal terms of art commonly used with FOIA requests and in FOIA case law. The full text of the newsletter is published on the Open Government website. The OLG conducted two Open Meeting Act trainings, one with the District of Columbia Retirement Board and one combined MOTA OMA training. In its efforts to expand its reach and promote greater civic engagement, the OLG made the second of what we hope will be many grassroots community group presentations on FOIA and the OMA. The April 24th presentation was before the Gateway Community Association at their monthly meeting. The OLG was very well received, and as a result of the informative presentation, invited to attend a Ward 5 ANC meeting later this month to make a similar presentation. On April 27, 2018, I testified before the Committee on the Judiciary and Public Safety by delivering the FY 2018 budget testimony of Director Hughes as written by her. The full testimony from the hearing is published on the Open Government, Office of Open Government website. In her written follow-up responses to the committee, Director Hughes requested that the OGC receive a $43,000 allotment as was provided in FY 2017, an enhancement of $15,000 to cover operation costs from the ethics side, and $20,000 in legal services funding to cover the salary increase for the one legal service FTE. The Office of Open Government Establishment Amendment Act of 2017, which would establish the OOG as an independent office with its own board, remains under consideration for inclusion in the Budget Support Act. This concludes the OOG's May 4th, 2017 board report.
Thank you, Mr. Barton.
You're welcome.
Do you have any questions from the board? Next, we'll have their report by Director Sovin on behalf of Government Ethics.
Good morning, Chairman Collier. Okay, so I'm going to run through the agenda. Hope everybody had a good month. This has been a very busy month, and as you can see from some of the items that we're going to have to discuss today, there is much to get through. So let me start out with some of our statistics. Investigations opened, we opened 11 investigations as opposed to the previous month where we had opened only three, and the month before that where we had only opened one investigation. So where we had had a nice sort of low number of cases, we now have back to our old 13 to 16 open case range. So we have 16 open currently. We were able to close two in the current month, and we still have the same number of stayed cases, which are 22. Mostly because none of those cases that are stayed moved in any direction. We're still waiting on a number of them from the Inspector General's office, which we are told are forthcoming.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to say I was pleased to see the stayed cases now in their categories of why they're stayed, and I appreciate that information. So it's
Let me just put that on the record,
yeah,
as long as you mention it. So for court cases or cases that are pending in court, there are two of them. We have one case that's going through the Office of Employee Appeals, that we thought made sense to stay it only because we don't want to duplicate enforcement proceedings or adjudicatory proceedings. The 14 with the OIG is the one that I've talked about before. It's with a single agency that's doing they're doing multiple investigations on potential gift-giving, improper gift-giving to its employees. The Attorney General's office has one, we're stayed one case that OAG has pending, a Civil False Claims Act case. Again, we don't want to duplicate efforts there. Counsel, we have three we stayed because of counsel action, and those are the ones I've mentioned in the past, which are post-employment matters that there's been some sort of a technical violation by a very low-level person as far as coming back before their agency within the 1 year. And we felt it made sense to stay these cases because in our comprehensive code of conduct proposal, we are recommending that those low-level folks no longer be subject to that 1 year cooling-off period, that it should only pertain to the higher-level folks. So we felt it's unfair at the same time to prosecute these folks while we're recommending that, you know, they should be out from under this, what we thought was a heavy burden for low-level folks to have to adhere to. We thought it made sense at the time when we made the proposal, and I know some of you folks weren't here at the time, but at the time there was a general consensus that to place such an onerous burden on every employee of the district government would hinder the district government's efforts at employing the best and the brightest, because they didn't want to have this hanging over their heads afterwards. We have one with the IRS and the Office of Tax and Revenue, which is a potential criminal complaint. So that's pending. So that's our list, 22. Okay, next item, publication and reporting obligations. We recently updated our performance statistics for the second quarter of fiscal year 2017, and I am pleased to report that we met or exceeded all of our performance marks. That information is in the Dropbox. And then if you could just turn to it for a minute, I'd like to just highlight a couple of the items so you know to what we're being held. If you can, you look at the beginning part here, these are our performance indicators. Okay, so the first one is percent of formal written advisory opinions appealed to the ethics board. Our target there is no more than 10%, and right now we're at 0%, which is excellent. The next one is percent of formal written advisory opinions issued within 30 days of receipt of complete information from requester. And our target there is 85%, and for this quarter we're at 100%. And I skipped one. The very first one is the percent of advice queries received that were handled as informal rather than formal advice. Our target there is 80%. Last quarter we met, we exceeded it at 95%, and now we're at 98%. So we're definitely headed in the right direction there. The second set of indicators, conduct timely and appropriate investigations and enforcement actions. First indicator is percent of investigations resolved by dismissal, negotiated disposition, or issuance of notice of violation within 120 days of initiation. And our target there is 80%. We exceeded it. We're at 100% right now for this quarter. Percent of enforcement actions that result in a sanction. Again, our target there is 85%. We're at 100% right now. Percent of final ethics board orders issued within 45 days of close of the hearing record. And our target there is 85%. But, of course, we didn't have any hearings, so it'll show up as 100%. Item 3, conduct mandatory training on the code of conduct and produce ethics training materials. We have three measures there. First one is percent of evaluations completed by attendees with an overall positive rating of our trainers of 3 or higher. That's 3 out of 5, 5 being the highest on the BEGA training evaluation form. We have an 80% goal there. We were at 94% this quarter, which is excellent for our trainers. Percent of offsite agency training requests that were granted. So in other words, when an agency calls in and says, can you give us an offsite training, 90% of the time we're supposed to say yes. and we're at 100%. So we never say no.
What would be the reasons for saying no? I mean,
because it's just
a
too
conflict.
Much, just too much going on. We couldn't fit it in. Okay. Percent of agency trainings held within 90 days of agency making the request. So an agency calls and says, we need training. How quickly? So it's one thing for us to say yes, and it's another for us to say, yeah, we'll do it at the end of August. So we have a measure there that says, okay, well, we've got to, if we're going to say yes, we got to at least do it within 90 days. Our target there is 90%. We're at 100% on that right now for this quarter. The last one is create and maintain a highly efficient, transparent, and responsive district government. There are 9 measures there. Those are not our measures. Those are the mayor's measures. And she has not yet instituted them. She has not implemented them. So they won't become effective until October 2017. So we'll see what they say. But so far, based on these, it's all published. We're in great shape. So far, everybody's working hard, and we're meeting our expectations under the mayor's performance plan.
Excellent.
Okay. Next item, trainings and outreach. Speaking of trainings, attended by the staff, Senior Attorney Grimaldi, who is also our ADA coordinator, attended an ADA training, which is good, and he's all trained up now. Advisor Janet Foster attended a legal ethics training seminar entitled The Legal Technology Jungle, Surviving the Law's Greatest Ethical Challenges. The 3-hour training was sponsored by the Office of the Attorney General and covered the ethical challenges of practicing law with and around technology. Conducted by the staff, we did 11, which is one more than 10 we conducted the previous month. The 11 trainings include 2 new employee orientations and MSS trainings, 1 general board and commission training sessions at the DC Retirement Board, which was cut short and we're going to have to reschedule, Alcohol Beverage Regulation Administration, or ABRA, we did one there, the Committee on Persons with Disabilities, we did one at the Public Service Commission, and we participated in the mayor's Office of Partnership and Grant Services Donation Management Training. I also met with the new COO of the DC Public School System to provide him with a personalized ethics training, since he's probably going to be advising the very closely the chancellor. As you recall, the previous month we gave the same sort of personalized training to the chancellor, and so we feel confident there were great questions, great scenarios, lots of good hypotheticals, and so we're confident that they're adequately trained up. Okay. Item D, advisory opinions and advice. We did 61 since the last meeting, which was up from 54 the previous month. We published 1 formal advisory opinion since the last meeting. The opinion addresses whether and under what circumstances a district employee is permitted to sell products from the employee's outside business activity to her district government colleagues. The proposed advisory opinion, also the proposed sua sponte advisory opinion on the ethical standards that apply to ANC commissioners was published in the DC Register for the required 30-day comment period beginning on April 21st. We have not yet received any comments on the proposed opinion. We do believe that it would have changed the outcome of a number of ANC investigations conducted in the past because the DPM imposes the same standard upon ANC commissioners that are imposed upon other elected officials, including the duty to avoid even the appearance of a violation of the law or regulations. So once that is in place, we will roll it out even further, and then enforcement actions will commence after that for violators. Excuse me. Item E, ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct. I don't have anything to report since the last board meeting on our ethics legislation. At the moment, the council is busy with budget hearings, having just finished up all of its oversight hearings. So there's nothing really to report on that. Rulemaking, we have nothing new to report on the proposed rulemaking that was approved by the board at the February meeting. We have received no comments and will prepare a notice of final rulemaking for publication by the next meeting. As you may recall, the rule clarifies that a fine will be imposed on employees who fail to file a true, complete, and correct confidential report. And this will be important as we go through the enforcement cycle of non-filers of FDS reports that are due on May 15th. As far as the budget, as you know, we had our budget hearing last Thursday, April 27th. former chairman, board chairman, Bob Spagnoletti, as one of his last official acts, testified and again emphasized our need for funds to replace our aging FDS and lobbyist e-filing system. Following the mayor's budget submission to the council that did not include capital funds to replace the e-filing system, I reached out to the mayor's budget officials, who informed me that they would attempt to locate the funds immediately instead of doing it through a capital budget request, which would have caused us to wait until the start of the new fiscal year in September before we could get started. We were encouraged to hear that the council member, too, had been informed that the executive is committed to finding funds immediately and to transfer them to us through reprogramming. We also emphasized the need for an additional administrative full-time employee for lobbyist FDS matters. I think our former chairman made our points well, especially when he mentioned that the new law containing the twice-per-year FDS filing requirement for council members will not, by its own applicability clause, go into effect until these funds become available to us. Councilmember Allen also noted that his own legislative goals to increase lobbyist reporting to quarterly from semi-annually would require a new filing system and more administrative support as well. Finally, I was very pleased that a member of the lobbyist community testified in support of our requests and also said some nice things about the great customer service he had experienced at the hands of our small but dedicated staff. Thank you, everyone. Staffing. I'm also very pleased to announce that Ms. Asia Stewart-Mitchell has been offered and has accepted the vacant attorney position in the office. Out of the many qualified applicants we interviewed, Ms. Stewart-Mitchell stood apart, and we are very pleased to have her now on a permanent basis. Welcome, Asia.
Congratulations.
Last week, we interviewed multiple applicants for the vacant auditor position. The general counsel and I have settled on a leading applicant, and we expect to make an offer shortly. We are in the process of checking references. I'm not going to mention who it is because we're still in that early phase, but we're pleased because the person comes from a top private accounting firm. And so if he comes aboard, I think he'll be an asset. Okay. Lobbyist and financial disclosure matters. So public financial disclosure statements. As of today, we have sent out both email and hard copy public financial disclosure statement notifications to over 3,000 designated public filers. A little over one-third of designated filers have already filed, but we expect a large influx of filings closer to the May 15th deadline. We have answered over 150 financial disclosure questions and average a 24-hour response time, turnaround time, or same business day, which is my preference. We have now begun to address all bounce-back emails and returned United States Postal Service mailers. And we're researching updated contact information and resending those notifications. We're nearing completion. So far, our e-filing system is being held together by bubblegum and haywire is holding up, but we got our fingers crossed. We're nearing completion of our review of all boards and commissions to determine whether they should be required to file public financial disclosure statements given their duties and responsibilities. For your reference, this project involves a review of over 200 boards and commissions, and to date, we reviewed approximately 130 boards and commissions. We'll present a list of those that we recommend should be required to file FDS statements, along with a description of those boards and commissions activities in an upcoming meeting. I don't want to commit that it'll be next month, but it'll be soon. Confidential financial disclosure statement enforcement. Last month, we reported that an audit of the 2016 confidential financial disclosure statement review reports revealed that approximately 96 employees failed to submit their CFDS forms to their agency head by May 16, 2016. As of today, that number has been reduced to 65. After notifying the filers of their noncompliance throughout February, March, and April, we will now impose a ministerial fine of $300 on each of the remaining non-filers. The fine will be deducted directly from their district paychecks. We will use our resources, such as they are, to focus on current active district employees since it will be difficult to collect the fine from those who are no longer employed with the district. of the 65 non-filers, approximately 11 that we know of are no longer employed by the district. So that's good. That means most of them are within our sights and our ability to do something. Item C, lobbyists. I spoke at a D.C. bar event on April 12th entitled The Ethics of Lobbying in D.C. The session covered the requirements for being a lobbyist in the district and also included a discussion of recent legislation regarding lobbying, including the Comprehensive Code of Conduct. Attendance at the event was not as well attended as I had hoped, especially considering that I had sent out invitations to all of our 300 lobbyists. But some of them were there, they said, simply because of that invitation, so that was encouraging. But in the end, I think it was very useful because we got to speak on the panel was, I was on the panel, two other lobbyists were on the panel. Thorne Posen, who has a long history, not just as a lobbyist, but as a district official, was there. So he could speak from the government side. I forget who else. There were, I believe, two other lobbyists there. Oh, right, right. Mr. Claude Bailey, who's a lobbyist firm, and Rod Woodson was there as well. So it was a good mix of government and private. I guess I was the government representative, but I think it was important. It was put on by the D.C. Affairs Committee of the D.C. Bar. Okay. Lastly, on the lobbyist stuff, the final audit report on Manat Phelps and Phillips LLP for its January 2016 lobbying activity reports was submitted to you through the Dropbox earlier this week. As you can see in the audit report, Manat accepted our statement of findings and took corrective actions, including amending two of their lobbying activity reports to add greater specificity regarding their lobbying activity and paying a civil fine for a late registration for one of its clients. At this time, we request that the board issue this audit report as the final periodic audit report for Manat Phelps and Phillips LLP. I've already signed off on it since we don't have an auditor. And so I'll ask Mr. Grimaldi, unless there are any questions, which I'm happy to answer, to hand it up.
I read the report. I didn't have any questions. I thought it was well done.
Okay. I read the report. I'm fine.
Right. No questions for me.
Thank you, board members. I'll ask you to sign it then. We have four signatures on this one. I think we do. Okay. Just two other matters I thought to mention to you as an update. One is the new investigative tool that we purchased for our investigators. It's called CLEAR. It's an electronic database that provides us with real-time, in-depth information. CLEAR is the next, and I'm going to read off of this, it's the next generation online investigative platform designed specifically to meet unique needs of investigative customers. CLEAR streamlines research by bringing investigative content into a single working environment. It makes it easier to locate people, assets, businesses, affiliations, and other critical facts. With its vast collection of public and proprietary records, investigators are able to dive deep into their research and uncover hard-to-find data. This tool has already assisted us with a couple of cases since we purchased it. And I'll tell you one way that we're really looking forward to using it. Right now, when we do our financial disclosure reviews, we're essentially doing a desk review as opposed to a full audit, which means that when we go through, we essentially take the filer at their word that they're reporting accurate information. And what we look for is our last question, which talks about, have you accepted any gifts? Have you, you know, done anything illegal? There's a whole litany of things. And if they answer any one of those wrong, then flagged. But this system will allow us, with additional administrative support, I hope, to actually take a public filing statement, and if the person says they don't own any property, you know, in the district, or they don't own a business, that does business with the district. This investigative tool will reveal whether or not that's accurate. So I think it's really going to enhance our ability to do these audits. The last thing is the website migration. As you recall, last November we began moving our website off of the private server that was being maintained, or that we had contracted through the Office of Open Government, back to Okto. And that's been an ongoing, much more difficult endeavor than anyone thought in the beginning. It's taken months longer. But in the end, I think we're going to have a very robust platform that will be fully searchable. The other one was not, and this one will be, especially when it comes to our opinions. So it'll not only be a good internal resource for our ability to issue consistent ethics advice, but it'll be a good resource for members of the public who also want to look at our opinions and where we found things in the past. So we're looking forward to having that up and running. Jessica, I think it's tomorrow. Monday. We're doing a final run through now and just flagging it for bugs, and then we'll be done with it. So,
now, will that change the current layout of the page? Because currently right now the BEGA website includes OGE and OOG.
It'll virtually be the same. We added a few more things as far as buttons down at the bottom. I think there are three buttons right now at the bottom, and I think we added three more, but everything else is going to look exactly the same. There'll be a portal to the Office of Open Government, and there'll also be the same portal for Office of Government Ethics, and everything else is the same. The whole idea is to keep the same look and feel to it. So, all right. Yes. That's it. That's all I had.
I'm very pleased to hear about this investigative process that you purchased for us, because I know in the past we just looked basically at the last one. If people reported some wrongdoing of sorts, then we kind of delved into it. But I've often found in my many, many years that most people who accept bribes lie too. And therefore are not going to give you a heads up about it by answering that last question. So I think that this deeper evaluation is very important, because I always said that I brought this up one time, and I'd like to bring it up again, when I was on the council, and I really reported every ticket I ever got, which was over, at that time, $100 or more. Every single thing that anybody ever gave me for anything, and I reported it. And then there was actually a newspaper article talking about my bounty, because I actually reported everything. And meanwhile, I was at all these events with the tickets, and I always did like over and beyond, because who knows who does business with the DC government? You can't even get a list, because it's fluctuates so much. When you'd ask them for a list, they'd say, well, we don't do one because it fluctuates so much. And so I just put every stock I owned worth a certain amount, and I put every, whether they did business or not, I put every single event I ever attended, anything. And of course, all of a sudden it was council members' bounty. Whereas then I looked at my colleagues' reports. They were at the same events, and they didn't list them. So, you know, I got punished for actually following the law with a big article, and yet they, by not following through, were free and clear. So I think we should reward good behavior and punish the bad behavior, and I think this mechanism you've gotten should be helpful in that regard.
We're hoping so, too. Thank you. I don't have anything else for the public portion of the meeting. All right, at this time, let me just check with the staff.
Chair, I may have the information regarding our pro bono counsel.
Like it. Oh, sure.
I didn't want to misstate the name, obviously. We're being represented by Levine, Sullivan, Koch, and Schultz, LLP. And this is not the first time that we've mentioned that we've been represented by pro bono counsel. The litigation actually started sometime last year. So with regard to Mr. Sobin's question about conflicts check, I'm unless you
I was only curious because I used to do that at the Attorney General's office.
I understand. I just wondered why I wasn't asked much earlier.
I'm taken aback because you guys forgot me today. I know Ms. Hughes was not there, but, I want to participate and weigh in. I'm a disabled veteran, served our country more than most. Let me formally introduce myself. Michael Sindrom, once again, disabled veteran, served our country more than most. As I heard your plea, Councilwoman Schwartz, my heart goes out to you. You know I've been at the council, as have you, and things that are going on, you know, are awry, and it'd be nice for you all to step in with enforcement. In fact, you may be aware, most recently, I'm looking at the Express, campaign auditors election reform. D.C. council member failed to document $100,000 in contributions, an audit that showed widespread problems with the campaign of a D.C. council member, but that was held from public view until after he won re-election, has galvanized support among lawmakers for election reform. And that's the problem, Councilwoman Schwartz. Government tends to be reactive and not proactive. I applaud your effort. Like you said, you reported everything. And I'm thinking about Council Chairman Mendelson, who is a Pepco shareholder, right? He hasn't recused himself for anything. He shot down Betty Noel. He pushed through the Pepco Exelon, which irreparably harms all of us, and that ought not be. The point being is, it'd be nice if VIGA, in tandem with campaign finance, reviewed the financials. There are hard copies with campaign finance, but to my understanding, they're not online yet, which they should be. So again, it'd be nice for continuity, because it appears you all, are on top of things, and I think campaign finance, as this article points out as well, was far lacking. It says here, again, and I quote from the article, many council members say that in Todd's case, the office, they're referring to the district's office campaign finance, long troubled agency in helping or hindering district government's quest to shed its reputation for corrupt politics. Again, many council members say that in Todd's case, the office went too far, letting the candidate delay responses to important questions for almost a year. So council members, are employees of the people, of the district. So it may very well fall under your bailiwick. And again, it would be good in tandem with IG to, for enforcement. So these things that have been slipping through the cracks are not. There was, as I heard the testimony as well, the report about the boards and commissions, that some may be required and others not. I think that's a dangerous precedent. If you're going to do it for one, you do it for all, or you do it for none. The comeback could be, well, some boards and commissions are minuscule. Well, the sum is the whole of its parts. And if you're spending a penny, a taxpayer's dime, our time, that's the public trust, and it needs to be accounted for. Just like Councilwoman Schwartz indicated, each and everything she documented. I would dare say if you had not, Councilwoman Schwartz, you'd be taking the task, probably would be in silver braces and a carriage suit. I mean court action, right? But you did the right thing, and I applaud you for that. And that's the message that needs to be sent through the council, the granite palace, I call it, the Wilson building there with the inlaid granite flooring. It needs to be sent throughout the corridors of that building that, you will be held accountable, plain and simple. And VIGA, I'm telling you, when people hear of you all, they cringe and shudder. So, again, it would be good if it needs some modification, whatever it needs, to bring our government employees, albeit elected officials, to task. It was also mentioned about ANC. A lot of money passes through ANC with grants, their allotment from D.C. taxpayer, again, the public trust. And there basically is no oversight. True, it goes through the audit, the D.C. auditor. The problem is the auditor, for the most part, you know, familiarity breeds contempt, is in bed with a lot of these commissioners and just signs off on things. If it were required to go through an additional layer of scrutiny, albeit Biga or wherever, I think a lot of things that have been happening, pay to play and corruption, would not be happening. So that may be something further.
Thank you for your comment.
One other thing, Madam Chair. There was two letters written by Mr. Sobin, nonsensical, to which I put in hand responses filed with the office. I gave former Chair Spagnoletti and the council as well. I'd like follow-up, and I think it's prudent because they involve council members because Mr. Flowers is a former general counsel for the council, no pun intended. There's a tie in there. And to avoid the guise of impropriety that there be outside independent counsel to handle my weighty meritorious complaints, which have yet to be docketed. You may be aware that Chair Spagnoletti, we went through this with a fine tooth comb. There is no pre-filing injunction put in place with regard to me, but yet there is constructively. Because what Mr. Sobin does is he shoots it down even before it gets to the filing stage. So that, in essence, is a constructive pre-filing injunction, which, Madam Chair and the Board, I'd like you to take under advisement. And the two specific complaints involving Chair Mendelson and former Councilwoman May be taken under advisement, again, with outside independent counsel looking at this.
Thank you for your comments.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Or any questions, I'd be delighted to field them at the appropriate time.
Thank you.
Oh, one other thing. What's the phone number, too? Like, today, you guys all forgot me. It was given, and if I could record it again, you know, to phone in.
I'll after the meeting, I'll give you a call. And
okay, very well. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hearing no other public comment, the time is now 11:51, and we will move to the executive session. Okay. I'll start that over. The time is now 1:36. We are now back on the public record. I want to note for the record that the board did vote unanimously to move into executive session at the close of the last public portion of the meeting. We have nothing to report out of executive session, and barring any public comments, which I don't see anyone here, this meeting is adjourned until June 1st.
Thank you.
Great.